Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Hello and welcome to episode 111 of our podcast, Absolutely Intercultural. My name is Laurent Borgmann. Today, Friday the 11th of June 2010, the world's eyes are on the start of the Football World Cup in South Africa, in which people from so many different nations will meet each other and confront different cultures. Listeners across the world, please keep your fingers crossed that this World Cup in Africa will become a memorable intercultural event. I must admit, I'm not even a football fan, and certainly no specialist, but I thought I have to make an effort and speak about football today, about stereotypes, about cultural misunderstandings, and linguistic challenges connected with big international events, and not just football, but also cultural events. I talked with people from Belgium, England, and Spain to see what kinds of experiences they've made in intercultural communication. Now, my first interview partner is Jean. Many years ago, she moved from Manchester, England, to Bonn in Germany. And in our first category, Absolutely Confusing, the two of us try to make sense of the big event of the summer, the World Cup in South Africa.
Where I come from, it's called football, and I come from the country where it was, I think it was invented, I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
But in British English, it's football.
Right.
I know in Australian English, it's also soccer. Mm-hmm. I think it's football in South Africa, but I'm not sure when we'll find this out when the World Cup comes. I did know, but I always confuse it.
In our second category, Absolutely Ambiguous, I had the incredible opportunity to talk to Frier Leysen, the Belgian program director of the Theatre of the World event 2010. And she shares with us her confusion, but also her liking for ambiguities and misunderstandings.
What I learned through my travels is that the more I travel, the more I realize I don't understand anything. And I don't know anything.
In our third category, Absolutely Perplexed, Marlene from Spain tells us what men did to her in the streets of Germany and how she had to be careful not to misinterpret this behavior.
When they are talking, and especially guys, they just close one of their eyes and you are, well, what's going on here? Because when it's just one guy who does it, that's fine. But when it's one guy after another, then you start wondering.
In our fourth and last category, Absolutely Proud, we will come back to Jean. She shares with us how she sees a difference between Germans and US Americans when it comes to the national flags and to national pride.
Well, let's say it's not wrong or it is wrong. Maybe nobody should have flags hanging out. I always think national pride is a rather strange thing. I was in America this year, and I mean, they're just everywhere. Flags are everywhere, aren't they? It's just incredible.
Yeah. So let's begin with the show. As you all know, today the Football World Cup in South Africa starts, and I'm sure that most of you can't wait to see your favorite team win. Have you noticed that while we think that these international events are a great intercultural meeting place, international football matches often give rise to a lot of terrible stereotypes? These are moments when fans dig deep and sometimes come up with very unpleasant clichés. English tabloids sometimes use war metaphors to describe the German teams in a contest. I called Jean, a friend of mine, who moved from Manchester to Bonn years ago. In our category, Absolutely Confused, she tells us how those terrible old stereotypes always come up again when there is an international football event.
I'm Jean Lennox, and I live in a little village which is part of Bonn.
In Germany.
And I originally come from Manchester, which is quite the opposite of where I'm living now. And I've been here for years and years and years and years. And I like it very much, first of all.
So what brought you to Germany then?
I came for 6 months on a kind of a social thing.
All right.
I got stuck, as many people do. And I kept intending to go back, and I thought, and last year I decided this, I'm not going back after about 30 years. I thought, well, I might as well stay here now.
Okay. Now, when you came, do you still remember what kinds of stereotypes you knew about the Germans?
Well, it's so long ago, and we were very... Well, there were still all these old war stereotypes, which still, of course, exist.
Okay.
And the only things I knew about, the only words of German I knew were all related to the war as well. I knew the word Blitzkrieg, which every good English person knows.
Achtung, Achtung.
Achtung, Achtung, of course.
And Schweinehund.
I won't say a lot of the other ones because they're very racist, and I'm just not going to say them, but you can imagine what they do. They're connected with a certain dictator who used to be around in Germany.
Okay.
And we knew all this stuff. You know, it's always this kind of stereotype always resurfaces when there are football matches.
That is true. And so we now get that again in England, probably now with the football championship.
With the World Cup, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, but I can guarantee without having checked it, they'll have the old headlines up on the tabloids, you know, the tabloid newspapers, the Sun and the News of the World, and they'll have all these headlines that we're going to blitz them and stuff.
Okay.
And I just hope that Germany gets to play against England in the final, because that would be really funny.
Do you really think England will get that far?
Well, I do, because I don't really know very much about football. I would like them to get that far.
Actually, we are the worst people to talk about football, because I learned from Jean before we talked here that she doesn't know much about football and I don't know much about football. To be honest, I don't even know, is it really called football or is it called soccer?
Well, where I come from, it's called football, and I come from the country where it was, I think it was invented, I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
But in British English, it's football.
Right.
I know in Australian English, it's also soccer. Mm-hmm. I think it's football in South Africa, but I'm not sure when we'll find this out when the World Cup comes. I did know, but I always confuse it.
Okay, so for the time being, we call it football.
We call it football, yeah.
And we mean what other people think of when they think of soccer.
That's right.
Okay, not American football.
No, American football.
And the reason why I wanted to ring you today is because I watched this program about your village.
That's
and
right.
I saw your face.
You
and so
I
heard you talking. I even saw you using paint and being very down to earth and painting something. Tell us about this. What is happening there? It's all connected to the football, but I didn't see you in football shorts. So what is your role there?
Well, we got noticed by the German television programme, the second German television programme, ZDF, and they wanted to find a village which was preparing itself for the World Cup. And cut a long story short, they found our village is practically the only one in Germany who was preparing to do this, what is known here in Germany as public viewing, but which we call watching on a big screen, because you may or may not
I didn't realize. So that is not even an English expression.
Public viewing means looking at a dead body.
Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that, because all over Germany you talk about public viewing and what you think you're talking about.
But in the English-speaking world, at least in Britain, it is looking at a dead body. Like in Lenin in Russia, you can go and file
plastic
body. That's public viewing.
I tell you another one which is a little bit like that whilst we're on the topic, and that is body bag.
Oh, yeah.
In Germany, we use this for these pouches that you strap to your body, like a little rucksack, for example.
That's right.
Sometimes when you hang them over your shoulder, you call these things body bags in Germany.
I think they're called sling bags in English.
Ah, right. And of course, a body bag is also something about a dead body.
Well, you put a dead body in, after the war, basically, when there's been an accident or military use it in America a lot. They have these big black bags that you put bodies in, or when the victim of a crime goes into a body bag
to
be removed from the scene where they died.
I'm afraid we have to interrupt the two of us here, because as you could see, we are both not interested enough in football or soccer to stay on the topic for more than 2 minutes, but take every opportunity to change the subject. However, what Jean and her village are doing is really fascinating. In their little village on the Rhine, the neighbors take it in turns to invite the whole village into their yards to share the World Cup experience and strengthen the village community feeling by helping out each other to organize these and shift the furniture around to make it possible. We will come back to this conversation in our last category today when we talk about the old German psychological problem with their own national pride and with their German flag. Now, during the last World Cup, however, young Germans left their taboos behind and were using the flags just like everybody else in the world. Now, 2 days ago, I was very lucky and was able to get a personal interview with an incredibly interesting person. Frier Lesen is the program director of the Theater of the World event and came to Cologne to share her vision of this great international event of performing arts with us. While many of us interested in intercultural communication try to reduce ambiguity by finding cultural explanations for differences or theories for coping with unwanted loss of orientation, Frier does the opposite. She invites more than 30 of the most interesting theater productions from around the world to one location in order to force the audience to embrace ambiguity and misunderstandings.
In Theater der Welt, we really want to present young artists from all over the world living in urban context. I think the more a work is locally rooted and tackling issues that are locally really important, when it's cleverly done, it is the local situation becomes a microcosmos for the macrocosmos. Right. And then it becomes relevant to transplant it into another context. Then it becomes interesting to invite a production from Bangkok into Essen or Mülheim in Germany.
So you're not looking for the stereotypical Thailand production to show in Germany?
No, on the contrary. I'm attacking it and I'm very much against it.
Okay.
I think that when we look at international circulation of artistic works, certainly in the performing arts, you get a lot of exotic folkloristic work. And you see not so much contemporary work. And what interests me is what do young people living in urban contexts who are wearing the same clothes and the same jeans and who Google the same websites, CNN and BBC World, and how these people analyze their society and what it tells about my society.
I like the metaphor that you're using for this intercultural theater journey. You use the metaphor of the journey.
What I learned through my travels is that the more I travel, the more I realize I don't understand anything and I don't know anything. And for me, it's a long lesson in modesty that with our European perspective, we can understand a lot, but it has its limits and there is a lot I cannot understand and will never understand. Mm-hmm. But I have to accept it. And I'm fascinated by the part that I don't understand. And I think that's a discovery, that's a beauty. Theater der Welt means theater of the world. And when I look at the festivals that are existing in Germany, but also in Europe, mainly these festivals are very Western or European. And what I would like to do is to present to the audience here in this region the people that I met in the last years and that I think this is really inspiring people. This is really great artists. And their vision touched me or made me angry or moved me or whatever. And that it's like when you travel or when you meet somebody that you like very much, you want your friends to meet them too. And that's the festival effect.
Well, talking about the languages, how do you tackle that problem when you invite theater plays from around the globe, for example? They play, I assume, in their own languages?
We will subtitle every production that is invited. And on the other hand, I like misunderstandings very much. And I like also to confront myself and the people I invite for this festival to be confronted with the possibility of misunderstandings. And misunderstandings happen every day, the whole time. And if you accept them, then you can deal with them. You have a lot of artists in South Africa or in Asia who deal with European literature. For example, William Kentridge, who is a visual artist in South Africa, did a project for the Metropolitan Opera in New York. Mm-hmm. It's a nice story, I think. Gogol wrote it. It's a guy in Russia who wakes up one morning, mm-hmm. and he realizes that his nose has gone. And he goes out, he's really upset that his nose has gone, and he goes out in the city and is walking around the city looking for his nose. Mm-hmm. And at a certain moment, he sees his nose, but the nose is really dressed up like a nobleman, and he himself is a
lower class
guy.
Okay. And so the nose has come up in the world.
Yeah, the nose has his own identity, its own life, mm-hmm. and its own status. And he doesn't know how to deal with it. And at the end, he has the courage to go to the nose and say, please, would you come back to my face? Because I miss you, I need you. And then the nose says, why should I? I have a perfect life, I have a better life as I am now. But it's really dealing with this schizophrenia that we all have.
And why is that so attractive? What is it about this ambiguity that you seem to enjoy? Because you say, I like misunderstandings, for example. You produce misunderstandings. For example, I saw in the brochure that sometimes you introduce typos, so misspellings for words, and this must have put you into enormous trouble with the proofreaders. So why do you do that? Why do you like this misunderstanding and the ambiguity of things so much?
I have the feeling we live in a society that is made out of winners and of certainties, and I think it's much more interesting to live with questions and doubts. I have a lot of questions.
Well, with her questions and preference for misunderstandings, Frier certainly awakened my interest in those plays she invited from all over the world to this important event in the north of Germany. I hope I will be able to cover some of the action in future shows. If you are interested yourself in the festival, which starts at the end of June, and if you live in Europe, check out our show notes at absolutely-intercultural.com for more details. Some time ago, I met Marlene from Spain, who had spent some time in Germany, and she shared with us the cultural differences which exist between Spain and Germany. In our next category, Absolutely Perplexed, we will hear what experiences Marlene made with German men in the streets and how she learned to handle them.
Yes, I was in Germany some time ago, and I had a bit of a culture shock when, at the very beginning, everybody gave me the wink, and I couldn't really understand why, because in Spain, when you give the wink at someone, that has kind of sexual connotations, not something very
tell
strong.
Tell us, what do you mean by giving a wink? So winking one eye? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Right. When you are talking, and especially guys, they just close one of their eyes, and you are, well, what's going on here? Because when it's just one guy who does it, that's fine. But when it's one guy after another, then you start wondering. But
you know, we find the Spanish girls very attractive in Germany, so maybe it was meant like that.
Of course, I always considered that that reason, but then I discovered that it is part of their cultural. It's just the way they do things, because they do between them. You know, it's they give the wink at each other, Germans and Germans, or it doesn't have anything to do with a girl from abroad, I would say.
All right. Okay. Now, any other things that you found strange? For example, the food or the speed or how people reacted?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure that at the time I was there, there were tons of things that at the beginning I found strange or, yeah. But I don't know, like the meals, I expected lunch time. As in England, they have just a sandwich or something like that. But no, in Germany, people do eat a lot. That is something that I always tell to my classmates now, especially those who are going on an Erasmus exchange. I don't know. And another funny thing for me was that people, they would introduce themselves. When you are new in a place, you expect the person you are with to introduce you to the others, right? At least that is the way we do it in Spain. But in Germany, you do it yourself. You wouldn't expect your friend or the person you are with to do it for you. And the very first day I arrived in Germany, one of my flatmates took me to a party, and I arrived, and there were like a group of close friends. They knew each other perfectly well. I didn't know anybody, and nobody said, well, this is Marlene. I had to start talking to everybody and saying, well, my name is Marlene, I come from Spain, I'll be here. And, you know, so that's also a difference. And I think that's also, when you are Spanish, you think that Spaniards, because we are very easygoing people and we talk, and it is different in that sense. We will talk to anybody, but we expect a formal introduction, whereas in Germany, it is different. It is not the case.
Now let us come back to Jean, with whom I continued the football conversation about the psychological problems that some Germans used to have with their national pride after the war and the taboo of private flags. Now this changed a lot during the World Cup in Germany in 2006, when at least the younger generations put these taboos behind them and behaved like youngsters all over the world. And now, before the World Cup starts, we can see this again. Suddenly, it seems acceptable to put a flag in your window or even on your car. In our last category, absolutely proud, Jean is divided whether flags and patriotism should be seen as right or wrong.
Well, let's say it's not wrong or it is wrong. Maybe nobody should have flags hanging out. I always think national pride is a rather strange thing. I was in America this year, and I mean, they're just everywhere. Flags are everywhere, aren't they? It's just incredible.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go.
But the American flag is so much more attractive.
It's a
anyway.
Beautiful flag.
Yes. So maybe it has to do with that.
Flag, yes.
Yes. No, but it is true. We have a psychological problem. Well, older people have a psychological problem with the German flag, because this is how we were brought up.
Yeah.
We never, ever handled a flag. Yeah. I even had an incident here at the university where we had an international day.
Yeah.
And we had put out all these flags on the front. One year, somebody came up to me and said, well, wouldn't it make sense to put up the German flag as well?
Really?
We had forgotten to put out the German flag.
Oh,
so this was not even intentional, but we had simply forgotten. We were just thinking which guests are coming from which country, and we had forgotten to put the German flag.
That's so funny.
And then the year after that, I had an American intern, and I was in the middle of a guest lecture of somebody from Poland, and he tried to get me out of the room. I couldn't understand why he was so upset. And he said, Lawrence, come to your office. There are all those flags are on the floor, because I told somebody to take them off. After the international day.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the student assistant had just taken them quickly because I didn't have the time, took them in a big bundle and dumped them on the floor in my office.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see anything wrong with that.
And then
I really got a lecture from my American intern that this was really not good enough. He even explained to me that there was a certain way how you fold the flag. You don't only fold it and put it nicely in a box or something,
yes.
But there is even a certain way to do that.
Yes, that rings a bell. I've heard about that.
But there is really, this is part of the German history, of course, that after the war, the flag was an absolute taboo somehow, and this is how it was brought up.
Mm.
And of course, in my school, there was not one single flag. Well, as soon as you put the German flag next to a European flag, then it is somehow less intimidating. Which match is the first one in South Africa?
I actually know which one that is. It's tomorrow, and it's France against Mexico, because that's being shown in one of the yards in my village. And we're going to be given red wine and baguette by the person who owns the
place. Oh, that is so stereotypical.
And on Sunday, I'm showing Germany against Australia.
Ah, that is on Sunday.
Because I have an Australian friend. She's visiting and she's going to watch that. Her boyfriend's German. So that should be great fun watching it with the two of them.
So that's on Sunday. That means we must finish this conversation now. I must go out and buy my flag for
Sunday. Go out and get your flag. I've got one active spare one.
Okay, thank you very much for this conversation, Jean.
Thank you very much.
Well, we arrived at the end of our show today. I would like to remind you that if you enjoyed today's show, you can still vote for us on our website for the European Podcast Award. Go to absolutely-intercultural.com. There you'll find more information about how to vote. Now, enjoy the World Cup. Our next show will be coming to you from Anne Fox in Denmark on the 25th of June. Until then, bleiben Sie absolut interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.